Welcome to Call Forder Connect, the podcast where a call can make all the difference in someone's life. I'm Kim Clyden, and each week we'll explore something beautifully simple but profoundly powerful, picking up the phone and calling four or more people. Four real conversations, four chances to remind someone they matter. This movement was created by Charles and Tracy Alder, who've spent decades supporting Australians through fire, flood, drought, and just as devastating, silence. Because loneliness isn't just a feeling. It's a quiet crisis, chipping away at our mental health, fueling anxiety and depression, making people feel like they don't belong. Left unchecked, it can become life-threatening. Together, we can break the cycle of isolation, remind our friends and loved ones they're seen, valued, and never alone. In each episode, we'll hear stories from people making connection a habit. Community leaders, everyday Aussies, and voices from around the world who are proving that something small can have a massive impact. So let's get into it, because the world doesn't need more noise. It needs more human connection. Loneliness is often invisible, but its impact is devastating. Recently, Angela Campbell listed 99 names on LinkedIn, each representing a life lost to loneliness. It was a stark reminder that behind every statistic is a person who lived and loved. Angela describes herself as a humanistic strengths coach who specialises in social well-being and loneliness. Living in New Zealand, she helps people identify their unique social strengths and create strategies to bring more belonging into their lives, at home, at work, and in their communities. With certifications in Gallup Clifton Strengths and VIA Character Strengths, plus years of community sector experience and her own lived experience of loneliness, Angela brings wisdom that is both professional and profoundly personal. In this episode, she shares how building real human belonging doesn't just transform our mental, physical, and emotional health. It ripples outward, changing the lives of those around us. Angela, I'm so grateful you've agreed to share your story. How did you experience loneliness?
So for me, loneliness came out of the blue, or at least I thought it did. I really got blindsided by my loneliness experience. And that's primarily because I was an introvert and I thought I didn't need, you know, the level of connection that other people needed. When I first noticed it, when it first sort of blindsided me, everything was going right. So I had a great job. I was doing meaningful work. It was award-winning work. I had a close family. They were living close by me. I saw them often. I was dating a great guy. Everything was going right. My financial health, my physical health, everything was on point. And from the outside, it just looked marvelous. But I knew that something was wrong. I knew that something was amiss. I just didn't know what. And when I finally figured out that I was feeling lonely, I was shocked, really, really shocked. Because I just didn't think of it as an option. You know, I went through everything I could to avoid it. I thought, oh, it's just burnout, you know. It's part of doing important work is that, you know, I'm a bit burned out. That's fine. Or it's just, you know, new relationship blues, just coming out of the honeymoon period and, you know, things changing or whatever. I wrote it off as anything and everything but loneliness. And so many people do that, you know, because there is still a stigma attached to loneliness, which is a real shame because it's such a normal, natural feeling. So for me, it really did blindside me and I was stuck with the, okay, well, what do I do now?
How did you first identify that it was loneliness you were actually dealing with, not all those other things you wrote it off as?
It's very unscientific, but the only answer I can give you is I finally started listening to myself. You know, I finally took stock of my own needs and stopped viewing everything in the context of, you know, what usually everything is fine looks like. So it was really just an act of listening to myself and, you know, just sitting down and having that good, hard conversation with myself. You know, there's a study that I love from ages and ages ago, where they offered people the opportunity to either sit alone with their thoughts or get mild electric shocks. And most people chose the mild electric shocks over sitting with their own thoughts. I thought I was, you know, doing great. You know, I was in therapy. I was doing the work. But this was the last thing, one of the last things that I just was not listening to myself and wasn't being real to myself about.
What were you actually doing at the time? What was your career like?
So I was in the charity sector. I was working for a great organization. And we were in a time of immense growth and change, which presented so many opportunities, you know, not just in terms of making an impact on the world, but professional opportunities as well for development and, you know, mentorship, learning from amazing people. So everything was going so well. We were winning awards. We were going hammer and tongs. Every outcome that we would have hoped to hit, we were hitting. It was really good. And I loved it. I really did love it at that point. So I knew that that wasn't too much of an issue. That was one of the clues, you know, when I was writing it off as burnout. And I was like, okay, well, you can get burned out in any job, regardless how much you love it. But if I'm being real with myself, it doesn't feel like burnout. You know, something is a little bit different.
What impact did this introspection have in your life?
So, I mean, I'm a geek, first and foremost. I've always been a bookworm. I love, like, my favorite magazine is New Scientist. So when I first discovered that I felt lonely, I was like, okay, well, what's a lonely geek to do? I'm going to science the F out of this, and I'm going to learn everything about it, and I'm going to problem solve. I'm going to intellectualize the problem, and that's how I'm going to conquer it. You know, I'm going to beat my loneliness by, you know, using my brain power. So I, you know, started with the courses and the books and the seminars and everything else, and reading all these peer-reviewed studies, spending hours poring over textbooks and so on and so forth in various fields, anything that came close to covering loneliness and how to beat it. One of the first things that I discovered or realized, I don't know if it was much of a discovery, was I didn't actually need to beat it. You know, it wasn't something that I definitely needed to overcome how I was feeling. I didn't want to sit in that negative affect forever, but I didn't need to eliminate loneliness from my life because it was a very helpful feeling. You know, it was showing me where a need wasn't being met, a need for human connection. So I learned very quickly that I didn't want to eliminate it from my life. And the question then became, okay, but what do I do with it? You know, how do I make this work for me? And so that became really interesting to me. And that's where I started looking into, you know, how we use our strengths to feed connection and overcome loneliness in those lonely moments. And also detach it from who we are, you know, because our emotions are part of who we are. They always will be. But in the language that we use sometimes gives us away. You know, when we say, I am lonely, well, no, you're not lonely. You feel lonely. You know, you are experiencing loneliness sometimes, but that's not all that you are. So it was really a reckoning in terms of I wanted to science it and, again, just got blindsided by my feelings instead and had to deal with those.
Well, you mentioned part of this was you were in a relationship. What impact has this reckoning had on your relationship?
So I'm no longer with that gentleman, and that's fine. We're still on good terms. The relationship as a whole, beginning, middle, and end, was healthy. It just wasn't the right fit for me. I was trying at the time to be monogamous, which is not my natural setting. For some people, that works really well. For me, it doesn't. But I was trying to be. And that was one of the parts of my need for connection that wasn't being met. You know, I love having a rainbow full of people in my life, all the different shades of humanity, and being able to connect with whomever I feel, you know, intuitively drawn to. So that was something that was missing for me. You know, in other people that will manifest differently. There were a few other things. You know, I was at work doing really well, but then there's always the question, you know, when you're a person who's always hungry for knowledge, you know, is there more to learn? Is the grass greener? Is there more of an impact that I can make somewhere else? You know, you've always got those questions in the back of your head when you've got a growth mindset. So it was tiny little things that added up to a big thing. In terms of my relationships now, I'm very, very happy. I've got great friends. I've got a very supportive family. And in terms of romantic relationships, I kind of keep them to myself. That sounds strange because I'm talking to you about it and who knows who else. But I do like, you know, to keep my privacy to some degree. That said, all of my relationships are very healthy. I couldn't ask for better.
Why did you choose to specialize in this field and then create a whole coaching business around connection and loneliness?
So one of the reasons was I acknowledged during my own loneliness experience that, as I said, I was already in therapy. I was already doing the work, and that not everyone needs a therapist. You know, some people just need a plan. Some people just need to be able to stop and breathe and take stock and devise a plan. That was my experience. And I was under no illusion that I was special. You know, I'm sure as individual as we think we are, you know, there are so many other people going through similar things to what we're going through at any given time. So for me, that was a big thing, was the fact that not everyone needs to be therapized for this, because it's not a form of illness to feel lonely. Like I said, it's a very helpful emotion, a very helpful biological cue is probably more accurate. You know, it's just like hunger or thirst. And I believe that when we experience those things, we have agency around those. If we're thirsty, we can go to the tap and draw a glass of water. If we're hungry, we can, you know, put a salad together. If we're cold, we can find a jumper and chuck it on. So acknowledging that we have agency over these things is really important. So for me, a high agency framework going forward was really, really important. And that's not to say that some people, you know, would not benefit from therapy, because loneliness can be tied up with a whole bunch of other stuff that needs dealing with.
I've never actually heard it put quite like that. It's one to really take stock of. You know, this is a biological mechanism and a response that if we understand what to look for, we actually can take action like we do with getting a glass of water or satiating a hunger. So for you, what was that first step? What did it look like?
So the first step was awareness, you know, just sitting with myself, as I said, and just figuring out exactly what this looked like. More importantly, what it looked like in my life. You know, and being very real about that. And then the second step was not actually connecting with other people, because if anyone listening has had a loneliness experience and has had found the courage to tell people about that, as I did, they might have received the same advice that I was. First of all, because I was quite discreet about my relationship, I hadn't shared it around and so on and so forth. So the first reaction that I got when I told people was, well, we just need to find you a man. My little feminist heart had a conniption at that. But the fact that I already had a man, so to speak, was like, okay, well, that's not it. And that's not helpful. The other reaction that I got from people was, you just need to put yourself out there. And I don't know anyone who's experienced loneliness and found the courage to talk about it that hasn't had at least one person say that to them. And the further I got along, the more that peed me off, because putting oneself out there is a lot harder than some people can comprehend at certain times during our lifespan. And B, it's not a catch-all. You know, you have to have a place to put yourself. You know, you have to have the good support systems to step into. You also have to be sure that you're not taking one step forward, two steps back by going into the wrong place and then being rejected or ostracized or finding it's not the right fit. And then that therefore makes it harder to put yourself out there the next time. You know, so it really needs to be a concerted, informed effort and a consistent one to get through that first step. And that's what I found. I found that I needed to stop listening to other people. I needed to take stock of where I was. I needed to be real with myself, take stock of my surroundings and look at, okay, what support systems, what's going really well? What can I make use of? You know, I really felt that MacGyvering the situation was the first step. I'm aging myself with that reference, but, but yeah, I mean, finding ways to deal with it that fit me instead of listening to the conventional wisdom that turned out not to be that wise, you know.
This is a very specialist field. I mean, I've been speaking to quite a few people about different aspects of loneliness and being lonely. And one of the things that has been very clear to me is that there's a difference between feeling lonely and being in loneliness. You know, there's the isolation aspect, the withdrawal aspect. How do you coach people who may be transitioning from lonely into loneliness?
The thing with loneliness is that it's a subjective feeling, and only you can say whether you're lonely or not, you know, whether you're feeling lonely, where in that loneliness you feel that you're sitting. So it's the entry points are quite, it's always interesting. Every person I speak to, every conversation I have, you know, I can't follow this like tight little framework and expect that it will work for everyone, because everyone's got different connection needs, different lifestyles, so on and so forth. When we're feeling lonely and going into loneliness, I think that's an ideal starting point. Or even before that, you know, when we're feeling lonely and we're like, okay, well, what's feeding this? Because it's very different. I feel lonely sometimes now, you know, and I've learned to manage that very well. But I accept that that's part of being human. And I know, you know, I have the confidence because I've learned to manage it very well, that I am not going to get stuck in that loneliness. You know, I'm going to feel lonely for a while and then I'm going to do something about it and it will get better. You know, just like again with the drawing a glass of water, I'm going to feel thirsty for a while. I'm going to have a glass of water and then, you know, I won't shrivel up and die of dehydration. So I think that entry point where you're going from the occasional feelings of loneliness to acknowledging that, hey, I'm kind of getting stuck in this loneliness for longer than is healthy for me or that I would like, is a really good entry point. And what I try to do is firstly come in and hear people. It's really important to hear about their lives and what they think is feeding this loneliness and these feelings. Then I apply a very basic framework, and I apply it in different ways depending on the person I'm working with. But it basically goes, I am, I have, and I can. So there are three stages. They look different for everyone. But I am is basically, I am a person who experiences loneliness. I am aware of what that actually looks like for me. So it's the taking stock stage. The next stage in the framework is the I have, and that is the strengths and support. So recognizing the tools that we have around us so that we can MacGyver a solution, so that we can move forward through that loneliness into a healthier way of being. And then the I can is the bit that I really love at the end. So the I can stage is, how can I apply this in my life and how can I essentially pay it forward? Because the great thing about learning to do connection really well, to connect well as a human, is that unlike trickle-down economics, which, you know, is arguable, trickle-down connection works really well every time. And connection also trickles up and sideways very successfully as well. You know, so the opportunity, once we've mastered the skills around social health and social well-being, the opportunity to pay it forward and make an impact on our families, our communities, our workplaces is absolutely huge and very empowering. So that's the bit that I love the most.
How do you connect well in your day-to-day life? The trickle up, trickle down, trickle sideways method. I'd love to hear an example of how that works for you.
So one of my ways of connecting well is to tap into the fact that I'm just a loyal person. I've always been that way. I'm sort of ride or die. And so I play that, you know, in my friendships. And I am that person that you can call at 3 a.m. I am that person that will catch two buses and a taxi to meet you out at the airport. So I play into my strengths there. And one of the other ways that I connect well is just intentionality. And I think this is one thing that, if anything, is constant for almost everyone, intentionality around connecting is absolutely huge. So there are some frameworks that you can follow. So Kasler Callum has a great one around, it's the 5-3-1 framework that she uses. So the five is connecting with five different people in a week. And the three is close relationships. So maintaining three close relationships, really putting the work in to make those relationships healthy. And then the one is setting aside 1 hour for connection every day. You know, whatever way, shape or form, you know, what that looks like best for you. But to do quality connection every day. I think that's a really great framework. And it's great to have those numbers to it, because when we attach numbers to something, it's quantifiable in our heads. We can get our heads around it a bit easier. You and I have talked previously about how sometimes numbers need to be humanized, but I think that they definitely play a part in helping us name the monster, you know, helping us look at the shape of what the problem is, the shape of the solution, all of that. So the 5-3-1 from Kasler is really, really great. I would actually add to that, I would say another one, and that would be 1 hour of connecting with yourself each day. Whether that's through going through for a, you know, walk in nature, whether it's meditation, whether it's journaling or, you know, creative enterprises or whatever it is, but whatever connects you to yourself, I would add that to the 5-3-1. But that's a great framework to start with if anyone was, you're considering that. Her book is very much worth reading as well. She's got some great insights. But in terms of connecting well, I think everyone's got their own great way to do that. And my way of looking at it is that if we build on the strengths that we've already got, for a start, that gives us confidence when we're not feeling our best. You know, when we're stuck in a loneliness experience, it sucks. And we're not feeling our most confident, we're not feeling our best. So if we can lean into our strengths to find a way out, you know, sort of embrace a little bit of appreciative inquiry in that regard, then it gives us the confidence to take that next step.
If you're on the other side of this and you're noticing that someone has withdrawn or maybe more isolated than they usually are, obviously a lot of our attention turns to depression and mental health issues. How would you suggest when we're connecting with people to give them the space they need to share something with us?
So first of all, I mean, obviously you can't discount the possibility that someone is feeling depressed instead of lonely. You know, none of us, well, very few of us are psychics who can look into each other's minds and say, well, this is what's going on. So I think the first step is just to be there and to hear them, to show that you've noticed. You know, go back to the old I've noticed questions. They always tend to work. You know, I've noticed that you seem a bit off lately. You don't seem yourself. Or I've noticed that you seem a bit withdrawn. Or I've noticed that you've been quiet lately. You know, is there anything that's going on that I might, you know, be able to hear you on or help you with? I've noticed statements tend to go down very well and open conversations very well. In terms of helping someone with that loneliness, one piece of advice that I would give someone who's sort of looking at it from the outside is if you're not ready to have that conversation, for heaven's sake, don't. Because humans give really crappy advice when they're forced to have conversations that they're not ready for. So if you're not ready to have that conversation, you know, there's nothing wrong with opening it, but it could be, look, what it could sound like is, hey, I've noticed that you seem a bit quiet lately. You know, do you want to talk about anything? Or is there someone else that you would feel comfortable connecting with? You know, can I help you find someone whose guidance might be more suited than mine?
Angela, honestly, it's been such an eye-opener and such a pleasure having you share your story. Hopefully we haven't betrayed your privacy that you hold so dear, but I'm so grateful for your input and for your insights. It's been a pleasure chatting with you today, and I hope to do it again soon.
Absolutely. Well, I'm always there for a bit of tactical oversharing, and I just want to thank you for, you know, having these conversations about loneliness and social well-being, because it's so important just to keep it front of mind and to let people know that there is a pathway there for them to explore so that they don't get stuck in these feelings.
Social wellbeing and strengths coach from New Zealand, Angela Campbell, helping people uncover the unique social strengths and use them to build real belonging at home, at work, and in community. This podcast is recorded for educational and inspirational purposes only. The information provided in these stories does not constitute professional legal, medical, or business advice. Should you require assistance, please seek your own independent assessment. To get involved in this movement, go to call4.org and sign up to set up your call list. You'll receive reminders to call those you care about and help them feel connected and valued. Until next week, call 4 to connect.